What if you got the call we all fear? Your significant other has been in a serious accident and you don't know if he or she is going to live. What if he doesn't wake up? Can I keep the house? How much insurance do I have? What is probate anyway? And what is the password to his phone? This is exactly the experience my next guest has had as she realized she didn't even remotely have her act together at all. Fortunately for us, she looked around the hospital at the time and realized from talking to others going through similar circumstances that very few of us have thought this stuff through. So she wrote a book, sharing what she learned. Chanel Reynolds joins me, and the book she has written is What Matters Most, the Get Your Act Together or Get Your Stuff Together Guide to Wills, Money, Insurance, and Life's What Ifs. Welcome to the show, Chanel.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So on July 17th, 2009, you got the call we all fear. What happened and what ensued?
Yeah, well, actually, it was a lot of voicemails and missed calls that I got when I was over at a friend's barbecue and went to grab my phone to take a picture. And then I noticed there are all these missed calls from numbers I didn't recognize. And my first inclination was to not listen to them. But something felt off. And from that moment forward, all I knew was my husband had been in an accident. They'd been trying to find me. It was really bad. And they took him. And I didn't know to where or what was going on. So I was able to try to get my wits together for a second, told my son that he was going to have a surprise birthday or a surprise sleepover at my friend's house, and rushed to the hospital, calling around, actually.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out what hospital he was at. So that kicked off a whole week of me going from, I hope he's still alive, to, is he going to stay alive, to realizing that he was never going to wake up and he would never be able to really be alive or fully engaged in the world. Yeah.
How long did he stay alive?
Well, he officially died at the scene with a traumatic cardiac arrest or heart attack, I believe. And they had a group of really talented people bring him to a level one trauma hospital. And when he arrived, he had a pulse, which apparently shocked the paramedics, but he never woke up. Okay. So he was still technically alive or with us on the machines, on ventilators with like 1,000 tubes going in and out, but he never woke up or regained consciousness.
So you're in this week of hell where, again, you know, he's breathing, he's got a pulse, but he's really kind of not alive as we know it. And you must have had, obviously, the shock, and it takes time just to even get a little bit acclimated to that. But in your dark moments, you're going, wait a minute, do we have wills? I think we have wills, but did we sign the wills? And if we didn't sign them, is there enough there that people will know what his wishes were? You know, what about the marriage, you know, crazy things like, what about our marriage certificate? You know, did the state actually get it in the mail and notate it? Who looks at that stuff? You know, assume it. So take us through some of those thoughts and other things that you learned and want to share with us.
Yeah, well, from those first minutes, really, trying to get to the hospital and finding the right one, I called the people who I had on my favorites list on my phone, but I didn't have all of my late husband Jose's family phone numbers with me. When I get to the hospital, they handed me his phone, and I didn't have the 4-digit password to open it up to get in there to call anyone.
Yeah.
And so from these really very first moments, I realized that, like, we just had not thought through what would happen if something happened. You know, it took an extra couple of hours to find me and for me to get to the hospital. And, you know, the whole time I was thinking, what if I missed him? And then, you know, in the days that came after that, I was asked for insurance information and, you know, if we had our affairs in order and medical decisions and long-term care, disability care, or life insurance. And so really quickly, I was trying to be present in the room and, you know, not, you know, let my eyeballs drip out through my head onto the floor just to understand what was happening. And at the same time, there was just this growing, huge list And I didn't have all the answers to them. I knew some of them because we split, you know, responsibilities, and I had some of the information, but, you know, not a password to his phone. I didn't know if he had checked the box for disability. So really quickly, in the midst of like the worst possible moment I can imagine for myself or anyone else, you know, all of these questions kept bubbling up, and they were really all about legal and financial and insurance, and even just the basic kind of wrangling of details like account names and passwords. I spent dozens, if not hundreds of hours on the phone trying to get access to stuff or get my phone turned back on. And, you know, there's just this gigantic organizational failure when it comes to what happens if something happens. And stuff is so fragmented. Yeah.
You mentioned that these calls you made, you would end up talking to the people in the sorry for your loss departments.
Right. I not so lovingly, you know, came to call, you know, when I would call whoever, you know, trying to find where our family vacation photos were, or getting my phone turned back on, or our bank accounts. And very quickly, I'd say, hi, my name is Chanel. My husband just died, and I'm trying to. And often before I could even finish that sentence, there was this very scripted, ma'am, let me say I'm sorry for your loss, and let me transfer you to somebody who can help you. Mm-hmm. And I spent a lot of time figuring out what papers I had to send to who, to get more papers to send to somebody else. And it was an excruciating, really confusing process. And every single company or every single different kind of organization had it, you know, it seemed like they had a different process. So it took months, if not years, to finally wade through all of the just documentation and paperwork.
Not only that, you have to now consider the funeral arrangements, which may have been discussed, probably not, cremation, regular burial, the cost of that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have life insurance to cover it? Where's the cash going to come from? So many people don't even really have emergency funds. They're a paycheck away from a financial disaster. And yet there's definitely some financial costs that go on kind of immediately that have to be paid.
Yeah, there are. You know, the average funeral costs about $8,000 to $10,000 in the U.S. And if people have a hard time coming up with $400 to cover an emergency, most folks don't have that laying around. You know, in addition, we had health insurance and it was pretty good, but I had to pay the $10,000 out-of-pocket maximum, which is also something that people really can't cover. So we did have life insurance, but check doesn't come for a while. Mm-hmm. And there's a number of weeks or a month or two in between where, you know, we didn't have an emergency fund because we'd been, you know, kind of redlining our finances. We had a kid who was about to go into kindergarten, you know, preschool, and all of those costs are really high.
Right.
So we were kind of just at the point where things were going to get better, mm-hmm. and we would have been fine if nothing went wrong. But that's not what happened for us, and that's not what happens for a lot of people.
So you are a 39-year-old single mom with a 5-year-old daughter and a 12-year-old stepdaughter. You're a widow now. You still can't guess the password in his phone or his laptop. You never signed your wills, so everything went to probate court. You have no paid time off, no steady income, and a mortgage you can't afford on your own. What do you do?
Yeah, well, you feel really stupid for a while, that's for sure. You know, it was embarrassing, you know, and I'm also, you know, I was a project manager. And so just the fact that I couldn't find things or I hadn't really thought things through was, it felt really awful. One thing that helped just a little bit, but was kind of even more terrifying, is so many of my friends and family members would say to me right away, oh my God, we don't have our stuff together either. We don't have wills. We don't have this kind of stuff. So, mm-hmm. you know, in one of the worst spots I could possibly imagine being in, I also have to say that I, you know, had worked and I was college educated and I had some options, but the life that we had had was a 2-income family and we went quickly to a non-income family.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't lose the house right away. I prioritized using the life insurance money as a bridge, essentially, from our old life to the new one to cause
Yeah.
Or to help mitigate any, you know, as much additional loss as possible for the kids so they could just, you know, chill out and go to school and try to be regular kids for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, in addition to the loss of, you know, my husband and my children's father and the future we'd planned, you know, financially, I lost a lot as well. And it's a hard road for a lot of people to try to dig themselves out of a hole that an accident or an illness or a diagnosis can cause. And, you know, it took years, years and years.
My guest is Chanel Reynolds. The book is What Matters Most, The Get Your Stuff Together Guide to Wills. It's really not stuff, guys. There's an asterisk in that word. The Guide to Wills, Money, Insurance, and Life's What Ifs. So, you know, Chanel, you don't sell any financial products. You don't sell life insurance or disability insurance. You don't sell trusts or put trusts together, and neither do I. So let's discuss what people need without kind of having to worry about, you know, the overselling of some kind of item. So starting now, which is the time to do it before something like this may happen, let's start with life insurance. So first of all, why do you think it's so hard for people to sign the papers to secure some life insurance when they'll sign crazy papers for a mortgage? You know, it's a 27-page document, but they're not willing to sign a 2-page document to get some life insurance.
Yeah, well, I mean, we don't like paying for a service we hope to never use, first of all. I mean, that makes sense. But, you know, we also don't like giving money, I think, to industries that we don't really feel we can trust. So I think there's certainly a trust issue with that. And it feels really optional. And it is optional, not like health insurance or car insurance. But, you know, if people do the math, that was kind of how we thought of it. You know, we'd bought life insurance when we bought our first house and our son was born. And it was enough then to, you know, cover us for a few years and pay off the house that we had. We, you know, hadn't updated our life insurance in 5 years and had moved to a much bigger house. And our finances look really different. And so because we didn't update it, I had nowhere near the 10 years of your salary plus whatever else you need equation. I had some, which was life-saving. But yeah, I mean, it's not a really fun thing to buy. You know, going out to dinner is a lot nicer than the $30 or $50 a month you spend on life insurance,
right,
for sure.
Exactly.
But for people who, you know, where if one person's income and a couple, or if your income were to go away, if that would cause everything else to fall apart too, having some life insurance is a good thing, I think. And my personal experience is it helped. Yeah.
Yeah. If you think about it, like your insurance on your house.
Right.
I mean, you don't buy insurance on your house and hope that your house burns down. But if it does, you've got the resources to rebuild. And it's the same thing with life insurance, but especially that lost income. That's a big deal, and especially considering that I think most women, and you mentioned this in your book, most women make less than their male counterparts. They spend more time caregiving, so they're even less time is spent in the workforce. And because of this, you know, they kind of end up with less money at the end, especially in a situation where they find themselves stranded because of an event like this. So, you know, life insurance can really fill that gap. Let's move on from that. There's basic paperwork that you need. There's your social security card, like the real one, the birth certificate, you know, the real birth certificate.
The real stuff, right.
The real stuff, you got to have that. Where is that stuff? You got to ask yourself, if you're listening to this, where is that stuff? And, you know, could someone, maybe you know where it is, but could someone else find it?
Exactly. There were just the basic, you know, like insurance cards, social security numbers, marriage certificates, birth certificates. Because we had done our wills and we'd done, you know, some of the basic, you know, what they call estate planning, which was a will and a living will, which is end of life planning, and a power of attorney document for, you know, people who can make decisions for you if it's not necessarily an end of life situation. We'd done them, which was great, but they were sitting in my inbox unsigned, which helped me not at all.
Yes.
We lived in a community property state, and because we didn't have any, you know, international citizenship or any complicated, you know, child guardianship issues. Mm-hmm. Going through probate for me was relatively easy, but it still cost a few thousand dollars that I'd rather not have paid to have an attorney helped me through it because I didn't even know what probate was. And then just the passwords to account information.
You never think about that.
Yeah, for your credit cards, for your bank accounts, for your 401ks, is your name on it? Because if your name's on it, you have access to it. It also means you're responsible for it. And then just simple stuff like updating your beneficiaries or naming a beneficiary on all of your financial accounts.
Yeah.
Because even if you have one listed in your will, you know, which half of Americans have a will and the other half don't, whoever is listed as the beneficiary at that financial establishment, that trumps a will. And often people will sign somebody up, you know, like their mother or sister or spouse, and not update it for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And 10 years later, you know, you might be married to somebody else and not want your ex to get your retirement funds. So the little things are the big things, is what I found out. Yeah.
A good financial advisor will be on top of those things with you and for you to make sure you've dotted those I's. You know, there was one thing here. We're out of time. I mean, I think I could, you know, we could do another session on this, and we probably will. But what about the very private things, you know, the private stuff that you don't really want your children seeing and remembering you by, if you know what I mean? So what do you recommend there?
You know, I had a friend actually make this recommendation a few years ago when I was talking about all of the things that can get lost and never found. And he said, well, actually, we have a friend who's the cleaner. And I said, well, I don't know what the cleaner is.
The cleaner.
And I think it's from La Femme Nikita, the movie, where you have somebody come in and take care of stuff. But,
yeah.
You know, people have private, adult, consensual things in their house that they may not want their kids or their mom to find. Mm-hmm. And so having somebody come and make sure the things that are found get found, and probably make sure some of the things that you don't want everybody else to, you know, you don't want everyone to know what your specific kink was, or that, you know, that you liked to dress up or do whatever. Like, you don't need people to know that.
No,
people,
no.
You know, private things stay private.
Right.
I think, you know, whatever people want to do is great. And you can ask somebody and make sure they have a house key or access to where it is to come get, you know,
come get
your adult items.
Okay.
Or your,
yeah,
you know, Elvis jumpsuit collection, because it
okay
needs to go to someplace,
yeah,
special.
That Elvis thing has to stay private too, you know. My guest is Chanel Reynolds. The website is ChanelReynolds.com, where you can find out more of this stuff and all of the stuff that she talks about in the book. And the book is a wonderful book. I really enjoyed it. It's called What Matters Most, The Get Your Stuff Together Guide to Wills, Money, Insurance, and Life's What Ifs. Chanel, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
To hear this and any interview that we do, if you have any question about what we've just discussed, we'd love to get your questions. Visit our website, stevepomerantz.com, to join the conversation. While you're there, sign up for our weekly update, where we will tell you about all of our live events and important topics that we've covered this week, straight to your inbox. That's stevepomerantz.com.